Devin, would you come here and sit, please? Oh, and Dad, would you sit where Devin was sitting?
And I noticed Mike didn't have anybody. So, Mike, would you sit over here between Angie and Charles, please? What I'm going to talk about this morning, I dream about. You know, I can get lost in dreaming about this. Lost in pleasure in dreaming about this. But what I'm going to talk about this morning, I dread with a dread that you cannot believe. I dread it. What I'm going to talk about this morning, I love it. I love it. I don't just like it, I love it. I love it. But I hate it with a passion. I hate it with a passion. I'll seek this, I'll go looking for this, I'll put all kinds of effort into getting this. But I'll avoid it like the plague. I'll do almost anything to stay away from it. Sometimes I and you will embrace it, and sometimes we'll resist it. Sometimes I need it. And sometimes I refuse it. Now, I'm not moving these people around just for fun. Well, it was kind of fun. I'm not moving these people around just for fun. But I would like to know what was going through your head between me telling Devin to come up here and looking around and telling Dad to go over there. And then moving Mike to sit in between Charles and Angie. Anybody wonder what was coming next? Because what we're talking about that we love and we hate, that we embrace and we resist, that we avoid and we seek, is change. Is change. Y'all can change back. You can go back. Unless Mike needs supervision, and then he can stay right there.
I'm not.
Thank you for your tolerance. There are some times I dream about changes that I would like to see, and there are other times that I absolutely dread anything that changes. Anything that changes. I love change sometimes, and I hate change most of the time. I'll seek change, and I will avoid change like the plague. I'll embrace it, I'll resist it with all my might. I need it sometimes, and I will refuse it. Because we all have within us an appetite for stability. Not staleness. There's a difference between staleness and stability. We all have an appetite for stability. You can blame this talk on Stu Hansen's because I wrote these ideas down while I was waiting to get my car fixed. So it's their problem. But and because of that, sometimes the flow isn't exactly like I would like it to be because it's a series of ideas. This is more of a me thinking piece, and you just happen to be stuck with following me along. But I wanted to think about change a little bit this morning. You know, if you think about change, there's only been two times in all of eternity, forward or back, when there has been real stability, or will be real stability, even in heaven. We're not talking about earth. We're talking about heaven. Now, we go back historically, if you can do that appropriately when you're talking about eternity and God. But if you go back historically and you look at heaven, there was stability for a short, there was a stability for a time, not short, there was stability for a time until certain events happened in heaven. In Isaiah, the 14th chapter, and verses 13 and 14, we find that this stability in heaven was destroyed because Lucifer or Satan said, "For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north, I will ascend above the heights of the cloud, I will be like the Most High." And so the devil, he used to be an angel, decided that he would disrupt the stability of heaven, and a giant confrontation ensued. We read about that in Revelation 12, 7 through 9. And I will warn you that I probably won't go to all the stories or verses I'm going to tell you about today just because I need to keep buzzing along. There was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, or Lucifer, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So before this time, in heaven, there had been stability. Now there's confrontation. Now, the other time that there's stability in heaven is after the judgment. After the judgment. Now, there's been changes all along in heaven. Heaven has changed. God's kingdom has changed. Devil and his followers were cast out. We had the creation. We had the creation which changed heaven. We find in 1 Peter where it says the angels themselves in heaven were looking down at this creation, wondering what was going on. Didn't quite understand all the happenings that were going on. Why God would send his son to die for these created beings. Didn't quite understand it. There was some trepidation in heaven. They were wondering about it. Jesus was sent, was born. Think that changed heaven? He wasn't there anymore. Jesus was living here on earth, a perfect life. Changed heaven? He wasn't there anymore. He was crucified. Do you think that changed anything in heaven when God couldn't look and turned away and everything got dark? You think anything changed in heaven? You think they were having a party in heaven during that time? No, heaven changed. Jesus returned to heaven and now rules heaven. And at the last day, he will turn the keys back over to God. And then we will have stability again. But in between, it's all been changed. Even in heaven. I don't know if that makes me feel better or worse. But there's been change all the time. And on earth itself, there was stability in the Garden of Eden. We don't know how long Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden. Could have been days, weeks, months, we don't know, years. But they were there for a time, and everything was pretty stable. Adam got up, cared for the garden. Eve got up, cared for Adam and the garden. She had a harder job. God came down, walked and talked with them. They went to the next day. That's what they did. Pretty stable. And if sin hadn't entered in, I suppose it'd still be that way. Still be that way. Stability. Not much change. But with sin, everything changed. Vicissitude is another word I just chose because you didn't know what it was for change. Vicissitude is change. Do you like change? Be careful. Do you like change? Would you like change? I have a notice for you. Your favorite uncle that you didn't know that even existed, he was fourth removed on your mother's side, has just died, something like your story before class, has just died and left you $200 million after taxes. Like change? I think I can handle that change. Use the word two different ways. I can handle that, I think. Well, I might be surprised, but I think I can handle that change. I probably wouldn't say, oh, no. I don't think that would be my reaction. I don't think that would be your reaction. So I got to be careful about saying, no, I don't like change. So maybe I'll change my mind and say, yes, I do like change. Yes, I do like change. I'm sorry, sir, but we've done the tests and we've done the pictures, and it appears that you have a cancer in your left lung, and you're going to require chemo and radiation. It's going to be a long six-month trial. If it's successful, you have about a 40% chance of surviving 5 years. Still like change? No. Doesn't sound very good. I don't know about you, and maybe it's judging you and my basket, but change drives me crazy. Drives me crazy. And I want to make some observations about change, because it is driving and does drive me crazy, that I think might be important to us in our Christian lives. And some of these might strike you as being obvious, but I don't think they're quite so obvious when we start thinking about them. The first is that change is inevitable. Change is inevitable. Whether I like it or not, it has nothing to do with it. Change is inevitable. And we see it all around us. We see social change going on all around us. Some people think we're destroying the middle class. Some people think are concerned about the people making buku bucks at the top. There's all kinds of social things going on. But change is always going on. And change is going on economically all over. All over the world. The powers that are economically powerful today, with one screw down of a valve in Ukraine, will change. Will change. So economics are always changing. And in fact, your economics are always changing. Are they not? Are they not? Very few people economically in their private lives put everything on autopilot. Everything's always the same. You know, the bills come in, the bills get paid, they're automatic, I don't have to look at any of them. How many of you like that? You never look at it. You never have any crises come up. They never have any changes come up. You know, about the time I think Charles is stable, he says, I got three apartments open. I got to paint. Or I got to make Angie paint. It's going to affect us economically. And Luke. And Sherry. There are economic changes going on all over for all of us. All the time. There's certainly political changes going on. In our world that we live in, on a continual basis, there are political changes. There are moral changes going on. Things that the general population as a whole would have considered morally wrong not that many years ago are now considered a matter of tolerance and your personal freedom. And it keeps changing. Are you changing physically? Well, probably. Probably we all are. I had one of my girls at work that decided to go get her hair dyed because of the little white things in it. Okay? We all are changing physically, whether we like it or not. And we are all changing religiously. We're either growing or changing or enhancing ideas that we have, but we're changing. You know, the sin of man continues to grow and change. The good of man continues to grow and change. The time of Noah, God, not some man, God looked at those people and said that the thoughts of their heart were evil, were only evil continuously, Genesis 6 and 5. Don't think we're there yet. Not there yet. Well, I've heard some things just this week of people who are not religiously inclined, who, because they were made aware of people's trauma and situations going on in their life, I thought made astounding offers of assistance and caring. So we're not there. I was thinking about Babel. You know, after Noah landed the boat, and they all got out, and they started reproducing again, and boom, there were people everywhere, and they got together, and they said, well, and this wasn't uncommon, this is just one time it happened that God responded to, let's just get together and let's build us a tower to heaven. And why did God say do that? Why did God say do that? Because he said, nothing will be restrained of them which they have imagined to do. So he gave them different languages. You remember the story? They were all one language. But the observation, the reason for doing that was nothing will be restrained from them that they desire to do. I don't know if you've ever thought about it, the restraint has been removed. The restraint has been removed. That restraint isn't there. And so man and this change that we see in our world, a technological advancement and everything else, you wonder where it's going to end? It's not going to end. Not until God comes back. Not until Jesus returns. It's not going to end. Because God himself said, they're without limitations of what they can do as far as physical. They're going to continue to expand and change. So in our world, our earth, change is continuous. And stability is an illusion. Stability is an illusion. That's not what I want, but that's what's true. Stability, things remaining the same, is an illusion. Now in heaven, after judgment, there will be no change. That will be true stability. But here on earth, change is inevitable and continuous. Second observation is, change bothers me. This will come as a shock to you. Change bothers me because it involves leaving the known factor. Leaving the known factor. Now, you can look at the story of the prodigal son all you want and all the motivations and everything else. I tell you, it would never happen with most of us. Wouldn't have ever happened with most of us, because most of us would never have gone to our father and said, give me half of my inheritance because I want to go off to some strange country, I don't know what's going on, and have some fun. No. Most of us wouldn't do that. Most of us would stay right there with daddy. Because I know that. I know what's going on here. So there are unknown factors in change. So if you change from being single to married, you think you know what you're doing, you soon find out there are unknown factors. Right? There are unknown factors that you weren't aware of. Some good and some not so good. There are unknown factors. I like to think about Abraham. I'm not quite sure I understand Abraham entirely. I think Margaret would understand Abraham better than me, because Margaret handles change in an entirely different way than I do. But I like to think about Abraham. You know, Abraham's settled in. Abraham's doing pretty well. Abraham's really doing pretty well. He's settled in. He has all kinds of servants. He has controlled the land he lives in. He's very, very wealthy. Very wealthy. He has his family all around him. Things are looking good. God says, move. I don't want to move. So he moves. I don't know how much discussion or prayer or effort that took, but God said, move. And then they get off a ways, and they're looking at all the ground, and Lot says, I like that ground over there. That's good stuff over there. I think I'll take that part. Abraham says, okay, I guess I'll leave that part behind. I'll change. I'm not sure I would have done that. God says, you're going to have a son in your old age. Abraham, you're going to have a son in your old age. You've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. I don't consider myself old, but someone tells me that Margaret's pregnant, you better get me to the hospital quick. Okay? Quick. Because it's not going to be good. Okay? They may have checked my heart before, but they better check it again. A 90-year-old man, you tell me he's going to be a dad, for pity's sakes. Talk about changing your household. Whew. Well, then he kind of gets, so he kind of likes the idea, but it seems to be a little slow at happening. So he kind of devises this other way, and they have Ishmael. He loves Ishmael. He really cares for Ishmael. Ishmael's his son. God says, he's not the one. He's not the one. And so Ishmael is sent out into the wilderness. I think that was easy for Abraham. I think that wasn't a change. Here I'm old. He scared me to death. I was going to have a baby. Now I have the baby. I kind of like a baby. He's grown up. I kind of even got used to him. Now you're telling me to send him away. Yep. And then he has Isaac, his true son. And about time he gets where, okay, I can enjoy him, about where Ishmael was before, is it killing? Go kill him. I just really had trouble understanding how Abraham handles all this change. Okay? It's very, very difficult to understand. Because there's so much that's unknown about what's going on. Third observation. Change naturally makes us uneasy. Irregardless of what it is. If you look at the Jews' response to the church in the New Testament, just exactly why were they upset with God and the church? Why did they keep wanting to go back to the old law? We talk about it in class. We talked about some in Matt's class on forgiveness and repentance and forgiveness and all the sacrifice and everything. We talk and we say, that, man, that looks burdensome. That, you'd have to have your own separate calendar just to keep track of the sacrifices. Just mark them on the calendar so you didn't miss one. And if you did something, you had to add one to the calendar. It just kept going. It just looks burdensome. Well, it was burdensome. It didn't just look burdensome. It was burdensome. God made it burdensome on purpose, just to prove to them that they couldn't do all the right things. So why would someone who is under a system that is a pain, it's burdensome, resist a system that has all the liberty and freedom built into it that Christianity has? Why would you do that? Because change makes me uneasy. I don't like it. It makes me uneasy. They were used to it. You know, God designed us with a desire for and a need for the routine. For the routine. From creation on, from creation God designed a routine. When he started, if you go back to Genesis and you look at that chapter, God made things, for those of you who are obsessive compulsive, so everything had its place. Water, you stay over there. Dirt, you stay over there. Everything had its place. Then everything reproduced after his kind. You didn't have to wonder if the apple tree was going to have peaches or the cow was going to deliver up sheep. You didn't have to wonder. It was routine. And the evening and the morning were whatever day. Every time. The evening and the morning were whatever. There's a routine here. There's a routine. There's seed time and harvest. Let me just keep going. There's routines built in. I've had at least three discussions this week with people who are men. This is my sexist comment. They seem to be worse at this. Men who are retiring. And I'm always after them. What are you retiring to? What are you retiring to? Because you take their routine of 50 years of work and the skeleton they shaped their life to and you destroy it. They're a mess. It sounds like great fun, this change called retirement. It's really a mess for most men. A mess. Because there are too many decisions. The routine has been taken out. So what would happen if you had to make all your decisions over every day? What if you had to make all your decisions over every day? Let's see. Today's Sunday. Shall I wear pants on Sunday or not? Every decision, everything had to be decided every day. Would be crazy. Be absolutely nuts. How many of the things that you do you do out of routine? But change makes us uneasy. But the fourth thing is we dream of change. We dream of change. Person who's sitting there, been working, turned 65, they're dreaming about their retirement. They're dreaming about their retirement. Imagined or anticipated change is what we call hope. Isn't it? Imagined or anticipated change is what we call hope. That was Paul's response to change. When it changed from Jewish to Christian religion, it became not this thing he dreaded, but hope. Hope. But do we dream about change here? Sometimes. Talked about winning the lottery or getting your favorite uncle leaving you money. Yeah, sometimes we dream about those things. But the problem is control. The problem about change that makes me uneasy, that makes me concerned, is control. Change could be good if controlled, but not always. It could be bad if it's uncontrolled. Could be good if it's predictable. It could be bad if it's predictable. The problem is I'm out of control. You probably already knew that. Because change, I don't have control. In 1 Peter, the second chapter, Peter talks of us as being strangers and pilgrims. Strangers and pilgrims. You know, part of the problem, when you're a stranger or you go on vacation somewhere you're not used to going, that doesn't apply. When Margaret and I go up to the lake, we're used to there. You know, we know half the people there, and that's different. But if you get in your car and you go on vacation, we go to Hawaii. Part of the fun is everything's different. You have to make decisions about things that are routine before. Where are we going to eat? What time are we going to get up? How long can we sleep in? It's decisions you didn't have before. Peter calls us strangers and sojourners in this land. In this world for a Christian, and I need to get this through my head, in this world for a Christian, things are never going to seem stable. Our ability to control and predict is very, very limited. It should be exercised, but it's very limited. I'm going to have to hurry or I'm going to be limited. Number five, change encourages us to remember the good part and forget the bad part. Children of Israel coming out of Egypt, and they run short of food. They get a little tired of manna. Manna in the morning, manna at lunch, manna at supper. Next day, manna in the morning, manna at lunch, manna at supper. Ugh. And what did they say? Why did you drag us out here? You remember what it was like in Egypt? Do you remember? You remember those? First of all, I doubt this really happened, okay? But you remember those big buffets? Those things were huge. We had melons and we had all kinds of great stuff. In Numbers, if you want to look in Numbers somewhere or other, 11. We had all kinds of stuff. There was a huge buffet. Pharaoh threw us a huge buffet every day while we were building. Come on. That's what change does. We tend to remember the good and forget the bad. Forgot all the whippings, the killings, the heat. Building pyramids when there weren't rocks to build pyramids out of. You had to drag them in or make clay. Forgot all about that. Forgot about them coming and taking our babies. Killing our babies. Forgot about that because I want a melon? Because change contains some degree of the unknown, it leaves our imaginations free to roam. Because change contains some degree of unknown, it leaves our imaginations free to roam, for good or bad. So if I'm considering change, I'm going to retire. I'm really not, okay? I'm going to retire. What's my imagination do? Oh, man, this is cool. I get up when I want to get up, go play golf. Margaret has to pay the bills. I never see a bill again. Not a single other bill. Not an ASC one. You know? So I want to visit with the grandkids. I visit with the grandkids, and we have a time, and then I send them home. Yeah, this is good. I can make my imagination really go. I may go the other way, too. You know, things are going on in healthcare. I can and do this. Things are going on in healthcare. It's just going to fall apart, which I do believe. But things are just, but I can make my imagination go. And I can, if I let it roll, I'm going to go get a shovel and dig ditches. So change, because it involves this unknown thing, leaves our imagination free to do all kinds of things. All kinds of things. Cain, when God confronted him about killing Abel, he said, everybody in the whole world is going to be killing me. Well, you only get killed once, okay? But everyone in the whole world is going to be killing me. Well, God gave some credence to it. He put a mark on him so people would leave him alone. But do you really think everybody in the whole world was going to be out on a manhunt for Cain? You really think that was going to happen? No. Change and the desire for it can devalue the past. This is the opposite end. Odd how this thing works both ways. Change and a desire for it can devalue the past and inflate the value of the future. Devalue the past, inflate the value of the future. The Jews said, you know, things haven't been as good as we'd like to pretend without a king. We really think that with a king, now we could really be somebody. If you just let us have a king instead of these prophets. Things haven't been horrible with the prophets, but they just haven't been really good. We want a king. We want a king. And with a king, we can really be a big nation. We can grow. We can be like the others and we can prosper. And so they devalued the past and overvalued the future, despite Samuel's warnings of what the king was going to do to them. Because something has been a certain way for a long time doesn't mean it's not true or it's valueless. Because something has been some way for a long time doesn't mean it's not true or it's lost its value. You know, the problem with change is I can't tell. Even when it's happening, I can't tell if it's good or it's bad. Can you? Haven't you all had circumstances where something happens, you go, oh, and it turned out, hey, that worked out cool. That was good. Or something you thought was really going to be cool, and it ended up you wish you were somewhere else. You really wish you were somewhere else. You know, Jesus tells Peter, he says, they're going to come and get me, and they're going to kill me. Oh, man, what could be worse than that? I believe you're the Son of God. I believe you're the Son of God. You haven't got anything to deserve this. In fact, I'll whop off somebody's ear if they come after you. This is not right. This is horrible. I can't think of anything that could be worse than this. Best thing that ever happened to Peter. Best thing that ever happened to him. Because Peter would be just as lost as you and I had it not happened. We can't tell. We can't tell whether change is good or bad. Part of what drives us crazy about it. We just can't tell. It got weirder as I kept thinking. You know, in this world, for something to remain stable, in this world, for something to remain stable, this is important for your house, James. In this world, for something to remain stable requires continuous changes to prop it up. So if it requires continuous changes, is it really stable in the first? I don't know. Is it really stable in the first place? I don't know. Probably not. So I can't decide about change. If I hate it or I love it. I do know this world is in continuous change. And I do feel that our efforts to find stability as in just this world are hopeless. Hopeless. I was thinking about this and trying to put this in some kind of frame. You know, I think as I live, I like to envision, and maybe I'm weird, but I think, well, I know I'm weird, but I think you might be the same way. Weird. I like to envision that as the changes in the world are all going by and all the troubles and everything, you would like to think that you got your feet planted on the bank of the river and you found some solid ground in this world to stand on. I've decided that didn't work. I decided I don't even stand on the bank. I'm out in the middle of the river. I'm being swept along. Part of the time I'm swimming. Part of the time I'm floating. Part of the time I find a log to grab onto. Part of the time I'm drowning. But I've decided I really don't have near as much control as I think I do. I'm not standing on the bank. I'm floating down the river of change and life. And that's why this Christianity is so important to us. It's because you may think and feel like you're swimming today. You may think and feel like you're hanging on to a log to stay up today. You may think you got some control today. You may be drowning today. But the important part is we know where this river's headed. We know where this river's headed. And God is in control of it. And at the end of the day, the water that runs down the river, whether it runs high or low or fast or slow, makes very little difference. Makes very little difference. It's where it ends up. So there's no stability in this world. Everything's changing. I got to get used to that. Everything's changing. Gets worse as you get older, you know. It really does. Gets worse as you get older. You hate change more and more and more and more. But there is no stability here. It's all changing. And so our stability, we have to find out of this world. Out of this world. To God. Who controls all events. He doesn't have to wonder about who's in control. Who knows the future. Who cares about me. Who loves me. Who gave his son for me. And has promised me where this is going to end up. That's stable. That's stable. It's not going to change. No matter what, that's not going to change. Now think about the Jews coming out of Egypt. You talk about changes. Here they've been slaves for years and years and years. Suddenly they're leaving Egypt with money in their pockets. Lots of money in their pockets. They all left Egypt wealthy. Leaving Egypt with money in their pockets. And they look and here's a sea and there's an army behind them. Well, change was good there for a while. Now it's bad. Then God opens up the land and they walk through. Oh, that's good. Oh, but they look back. The Egyptian army's coming through the same tunnel. Oh, that's bad. Oh, it closes up. That's good. You just keep going, 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 going. But at the end of the day, when the spies went into the land and the majority came back and said, oh, we can't take these people. They forgot they weren't the ones in charge. They wanted to be standing on the bank in control. They needed to understand they're in the river. They're in the river being swept along. I still hate vicissitude. I still don't like change. It's too easy. It's too easy to throw things away that are good. It's too easy to get into things that are bad. It scares me because I'm not in control. Okay? But God is. And at the end of the day, God will still be there with the same power, the same knowledge, the same love, and the same promises at the end of the day. No matter what happens. So what would happen to you if you lost everything? What happened if all of our jobs went south? They went south. What happens if we were thrown in concentration camps like the Jews in eastern Ukraine have to be wondering what's going on? What would happen? Certainly be a change, wouldn't it? But in here, you're still going to be the same person. You're still going to depend on God and trust God and His promises. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. But He's still there. He's still there. And He'll get us through all those changes till finally we get to heaven. And the one thing I can assure you of, that after the judgment in heaven, after Jesus turns the keys back over to God, we don't have to worry about changes. It'll be stable. So every moment will be pleasant and pleasing and comfortable and good. Man, what a promise is that? What a promise is that? This morning, we're going to offer the invitation. The invitation for me to consider change differently. Consider changing me more to be like Him and to trust Him more. The change for all of you to do the same. The change, if you haven't accepted Christ, to understand that you're not in control. That Jesus came and died for you and God cares for you and will care for you forever. His promises are solid and stable and will stay that way. To offer you the opportunity to take advantage of those promises, we stand and sing a closing song.